Hi, welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Andrew Kabanak. Joining me is John Purcell and Kerry O'Brien. You have a new book called Keating.
Yes, it's very explicit. That's the title.
This is what intrigues me more than anything, is that, and this happened when your book was presented, this is a little snapshot for the people at home about the book industry, but we get presented books from publishers, and nearly every time a book about Keating is presented, the tagline from the publisher is, books about Keating sell. They continue to. This particularly, with this look at Keating is fascinating from you, who know him well in the interviews, but why are we still, and I don't mean to say it that he's an ancient figure, but why are we still so intrigued with Paul Keating?
Well, that is a good question. I always liked it when people said to me when I was interviewing them, that's a very good question, Kerry.
I know.
That's a very good question.
I was trying to hide it.
it's absolutely relevant because it's now 20 years. 2016 will be 20 years since he left the Prime Ministership, as possibly how he would like to say it, but thrown out by the Australian people in a landslide. And you'd think, cast into history. But I know as his interviewer, or as an interviewer, and particularly when I did that ABC series, there was a huge response to that. He has no trouble at all commanding the front page of a newspaper if he has something to say. The two events that he's participating in related to the book, one at the Opera House, one at the Convention Centre in Melbourne. The Opera House event, 2,500 people, sold out in about 3 days. The event in Melbourne, similarly, another 2,500 people with queues of people wanting to get in and can't. I think a part of it is the nature of the man and his legacy. I think that, and it happened with Gough, Gough left government in the most controversial circumstances of any political figure in our history, and you look at the legacy he had and the kind of outpouring of grief and sentiment when he died, quite remarkable, really. Now, Paul Keating was a figure who divided. It was the old love and hate, but I think a part of it is that with time people have understood more about the achievements of that era, first in the Hawke Keating years and then when Keating was Prime Minister. It was seen as a golden age of reform that did in many ways set up the Australian economy very substantially for a far better future than it might have otherwise had. But I do think that the other factor relates to a paucity of leadership in the modern age, a real vacuum of leadership as far as I'm concerned. When I was reading back through some of Keating's comments in the book and researching areas like the Redfern speech, for instance, and his whole commitment to Mabo and native title, the High Court throws up this extraordinary judgment, throwing terra nullius out the window and opening up a real can of worms, potentially, both politically and legally, not to mention socially. And Keating decides, even though there probably wasn't a single vote in it, and more to the point, possibly votes to lose, took it on personally that he was going to write the native title legislation that was going to put the stamp of Parliament on the ruling of the High Court. And I'm thinking, and I'm reading the Redfern speech, and I'm reading the things he had to say about Mabo and about Aboriginal history and about the relationship between white and black Australia. And at the same time, in the background, I'm watching Tony Abbott as Prime Minister. And you could not imagine a greater contrast. Stop the boats, cut the cake, park the car.
Yep. Yeah. Or what was that comment to David Cameron when he was standing in Sydney Harbour? There was nothing here.
That's right. Yeah.
That kind of stuff where you think, oh my goodness, how's that possible today to say something like that?
So, people can make their own judgments about the legitimacy of the points behind Tony Abbott's various policies and utterances. But having seen a lot of political leaders in my lifetime, I just shake my head at the leadership of those 2 years. And you can go back, you can make the point about the deficit of inspirational leadership and effective leadership going back certainly beyond Tony Abbott. And so I think there's nostalgia. I think there is. I think there's a deep frustration by Australians about the state of politics today. And I think there is a kind of a hankering and a remembering of whatever you thought of the policies, we had real leadership.
Mm. It is.
And I might add, you know, Paul Keating's one of his favourite terms for a short time before they had to jettison it, the J-curve. I mean, maybe we're seeing a J-curve in leadership.
Yeah.
And those judgments will be made over the next 12 months or so.
Mm. The way in which this book was put together is kind of unique. Like, it's not a Johnson and Boswell situation. You're not sitting there hanging on every word. It's like a long version of your 7:30 interviews, and you get to almost act as the referee within what he's putting forward to you, and your voice is over the top of his voice. So it's not memoir, it's not a biography. How difficult was it to bring it all together? Because this is, we saw the interviews were excellent, and we all saw them. I mean, even though John Howard said he didn't watch it, we believe he did. And there was a great lot of material in there. Not a biographer, you're not a biographer, and you probably would know how to put together a biography. What was that process like? Because it baffles my mind. I can't work out how you'd go to set this task.
Well, I mean, I approached the television series, and this will surprise you, I approached the television series as an interview series, funnily enough. And really, neither Paul Keating nor I had any particular passion about turning it into a book at the end of it. I mean, he might have had in the back of his mind, well, if this works, maybe a book will come of it, and that might be close to what I might do as an autobiography. But I certainly didn't, and it was only really because of the enthusiasm of publishers that I forced myself to think about it. Because I'd spent a big chunk out of 18 months through the research phase, the interviewing phase, the post-production phase, dealing with the ABC to get it up. And although I was utterly gratified that it was so well received, my first thought was to just walk away and get on with the rest of my life. But so when we first came to think about the book, and I think what might have appealed to publishers was, oh, this will be a quick one. We'll just polish up the transcripts, because when they heard that there were 16 hours of tape, you could sense the shining eyes coming down the phone line. But the truth was, once I went back and looked at those transcripts, and all I thought I would do was just give them to the National Archive at some point, I could see that there would be, you'd have to do a lot of work, and the big question mark was, well, is this really enough? A book has to be substantial as a book. It was a substantial set of interviews for television, but not substantial enough to be a good book, to be a thorough book. And so I did embark on something that I knew would involve more conversations with Paul Keating, and got his agreement on that before I went any further. Again, neither of us realised how many conversations or how long. And it's quite a draining process for him, and very intensely demanding for me to construct the conversations. I've got the training in it, but you have to have a fundamental interest in the subject, I must say, and be fundamentally convinced that it's worth the effort, and that people will actually read that much of what you might say is a Q&A. I don't think it is a Q&A. It is a set of very considered but free-flowing conversations.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at your history on 7:30 Report, you put a lot of hours in the training, putting yourself head-to-head with some of the biggest names in politics and in the music industry and literature. So getting that insight, and one of the things that we talked about when we heard you were coming in was how many of those interviews we saw got to the person, which was the key. Andrew and I
We're getting to Kerry, there's no question. Yeah. Right now.
We're really cracking it. Yeah.
I'm just feeling the layers.
But we've discussed it many times because we're now doing these interviews and we're so far from it being anything
way,
like...
Way, oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's...
It always helps to be intelligent to start with.
Oh, that's... Well, that's we're screwed there, aren't we, Andrew? Oh, we're stepping back.
So you've actually got a tick.
Well, I think one of the interesting parts, and I'm going to hijack your question for a second, is that ostensibly the point of writing a memoir is you get everything down on a page, and an editor and a publisher will take you through the journey that people might find interesting. So the fascinating thing about this is I think a good interviewer does that as well, is you're not necessarily a co-star, but you're a conductor, you're a choreographer to the story. That
you know what, look, you can say that, but I would say really that it's a reflection of my natural curiosity, and it's a curiosity about, in this case, it's not just about politics. To me, it's about the personality of the individuals. It's about the qualities that make a leader. It's about looking at what it was that fit into the decision-making processes in Paul Keating's mind, if you like. But I'm also using him to take me inside the processes of government and the processes of a political party. So there are times when you really do feel that you are sitting around the cabinet table. And he is a great storyteller, you know, again. And I have to keep saying this, whatever you think of his politics, because I'm not here as his advocate, I'm still an observer of Paul Keating and an observer of the political process, although it helps that for a brief time back in the 70s, I was inside that political process and I did see it from the inside. And maybe that's what's driven my curiosity in part, because I've seen politicians as human beings, I've seen them operating both as a politician and a human being from the inside, where perhaps they're less hidden, more vulnerable, more exposed to the gaze. And I came away really with a far greater measure of respect for politicians broadly as a class than your average Australian gives them credit for. I first met Paul Keating 40 years ago when I worked for Gough Whitlam and then Lionel Bowen. Paul Keating was in and out of both offices. Lionel Bowen was something of a mentor to him, almost a kind of father figure. And so I saw sides to Paul Keating which did give me insights to a really fascinating individual. He used to quote Jack Lang, and there are these quotes in the book. But I'm fundamentally driven by curiosity. I'm driven by a desire, like everybody else, to believe that maybe the political game can be improved. But I also understand it goes in cycles, just like generations do. I am fundamentally driven by a curiosity, and my curiosity in this place is to try to unravel part of the mystery of Paul Keating, and I think there is a mystery associated with him. And funnily enough, he said to me at one point, he said, you know, this reads like a detective novel.
I was reading quite recently David Brooks, the New York Times writer, has published a book recently called On the Road to Character. And he has these examples, so he brings out people like George Eliot and I think Eisenhower and a few others as examples of what it is to have character. And I think he could easily use Keating as an example. And these aren't all perfect people, they're flawed people, and often that's where the character comes from. Yeah. I've always found Keating fascinating because of that aspect of him, yeah. That mystery. Is he a political animal? Is he a man full of character? Is he an idealist?
There's no rule that says you can't be any number of things together. You can be all of those things to one degree or another. I think it's part of what goes to explaining why he still strikes such a chord. I think there is. I think you can see very human qualities, along with the self-confidence and the in many people's eyes, the arrogance. I think there's a very human being at work. And I think, although we don't spend a lot of time talking about family, because I respect his right to privacy on that front, There is a real father speaking at one point. Far more than you sometimes get from other politicians and other public figures. I think he was, when he was at home, I think he was a real father and a real husband. But at the same time, he was an incredibly ambitious and focused individual. And for a guy who left school at 14, 15, and did not go through the processes of learning an intellectual discipline via university, he's always shown, I think, a very disciplined mind. That doesn't mean that he was not averse to departing from the script and, in fact, writing a whole new script. You know, there's a great story in the book that he's revealed for the first time. You might remember in his first year as Prime Ministership, he's got to overcome a huge gap, a huge deficit that Labor has to bridge to be competitive with John Hewson and the Liberal National Party coalition going into the 93 election. He knew when he became Prime Minister he had about a year to turn a massive public opinion deficit around. And towards November, I think it was actually in November of that year, so he comes in December of 91, it's November of 92, the election's literally around the corner, and he was in one of his periods where Hewson had grabbed the initiative again and was back in front. Hewson was always the favourite, even though Keating at times would head him in the polls. So it's November, and the GST is front and centre. One of the two primary issues, one is the GST and fight back, the other is the unpopularity of the Keating government. So Keating decides, almost as a spur of the moment thing, as he tells it, to walk into the Parliament one question time and announce to the world that a Labor opposition, if they lose the election, will support the GST through the Senate. So what he was saying to people was, don't think you can vote John Hewson in and Paul Keating out, but you won't get the GST. If you want to get rid of me, you're going to have to cop the GST. Mm. But he, having said that, and there was bedlam, his own side was shocked. The other side were utterly gleeful. John Hewson described it as one of the most important comments made in the Parliament. The Liberals went through the night celebrating. Labor was in a state of dejection. And Keating acknowledges that he had a rare moment of self-doubt. He thinks, well, maybe I've made a mistake here. He thinks, I've got to seize the initiative. I've got to try and explain this. So he arranges to go on the 7:30 report with Paul Lynham that night, and he thinks, I've got to take myself out of the game here. I've got to regroup and really think this through. So he goes back to the lodge and he calls an acupuncturist who he has been going to every Friday for some time, he tells me, and he says, come on over and give me the works. And he said Valium can relax you, he said, but it dulls you. He said, what I find with acupuncture is it relaxes you, but it doesn't dull you. In fact, you can come out of it and you're sparkling. He said, so he said 20 minutes and he put me out like a light. He said, I was asleep for half an hour and I came back. And he said, by the time I walked through the studio doors, he said, I could have knocked the doors down. And he said, I sat down and he said, all Ina would have seen was me grinning like a Cheshire cat. And he said, by the end of that interview, the message had got through to everybody. The Libs were suddenly thinking, oh, crumbs, you know, he might just have something here. And Labor were saying, yes, this could be brilliant. So it's that kind of insight, or some of the conversations around the cabinet table that I think are a part of what I hope makes this book a bit special.
Well, look, I think we need to wrap it up because we're going to give all the best anecdotes away. That was, I'm glad we got that out. God, it's fascinating.
I would like to just go on for another hour or so. Have you got time, Kerry?
You're sounding very much like me, John.
Well, Kerry O'Brien, thank you so much for coming in. It's fascinating. Just talking to you now, I mean, I had no doubts that Keating was an interesting figure, but I think anyone who's interested is going to be have their appetite whet quite significantly.
Terrific. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Kerry. And you can get Keating from booktopia.com.au right now. Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.